Welcome to Local Motion, KVNF's weekly public affairs program. I'm Corey Stanton. This week, we'll be chatting with artist Sonia Henrichsen, a recent resident at Elsewhere in Paonia. Sonia works in several art mediums, but today we'll be talking about her series, Snow Drawings. Later on in the program, Sonia and I also discuss her ongoing exploration of natural environments and how she uses her art to enhance an already stunning landscape. We also talk about some of the challenges that we face as a society, and that for some, especially people living in cities, getting out into nature can be difficult. We'll also hear from a local mom and daughter that recently participated in the snow drawings up on the Grand Mesa. Stay tuned. About a week ago, a group of North Fork Valley locals went up to the Grand Mesa and participated in Sonia's snow drawings. I asked Sonia to walk me through the day.
Usually it starts like at 10-ish, 10:30 a.m., and everybody needs to start at the same time. The project is otherwise sort of open-ended, but it's very important that all participants start together because that's when I give an intro and we talk a little bit about how this works and how we are going to create these patterns. It's based on a system of patterns, and a lot of times I use spirals because they're pretty easy to make, even for people who might never have walked with snowshoes. And yeah, and then after that intro, I basically, depending on how many people are participating, it can be anywhere between, let's say, 15 and 70, really. I send them in smaller groups along what I call the edges of the snowfield. And the snowfield could be a forest clearing, or it could be a frozen lake that has snow on top of it, or it could be a ski slope. So I'm just trying to get people to spread out along the edges of that field so that they can walk into it from different places and not all start at the same spot. So that way we get the drawing to progress from different areas at the same time.
It sounds really strategic. Like you must have a lot of pre-production.
Well, no, yes. Actually, the strategic point is really only in the very beginning of it. Yes, and there is a lot of pre-production, organizing, advertising, PR work, all of that kind of stuff. But once we are out in the field, it's really only that very beginning. And after that, it's not strategic. It's actually very fluid. It's very much made as you go. It's not preconceived at all. The patterns evolve as people are creating them.
That's so cool. What inspires these designs for you?
So again, the designs are not preconceived. So they are not something that I come up with in advance. It's all based on a pattern system, which sometimes is, or a lot of times, not all of them, is related to spirals. And, you know, you can walk spirals in many different ways. It's easiest to walk them from inside out because then you magically actually end up with a pretty round shape in the end. And you can connect them from one to the other to the other to the other, just walking from one, like finishing it and then walking a straight line until you find a new center and walk another one. And you can walk them right turning or left turning. You can walk big spirals or small ones. You can vary that. You can walk them so the tracks are really narrow together, which ends up creating a much more dense and dark image in the end. Whereas you can walk them with the tracks being very, very loose, like very far apart from each other. And then there's ways of creating more elaborate patterns that are comprised of spirals, like spirals around a big spiral, and then maybe another few rounds of big spiral around that. There's many, many variations. And I introduce the participants to all of that. But, you know, there are people who are more kind of like, how should I say, daring, and who want to try these more elaborate patterns. And there are also people who just want to stick with just walking spirals and not think a lot, because it's actually very meditative, because you walk circles and that means the landscape evolves around you. So it's kind of like a meditation walk. It's also fun to just listen to your own crunching of your footsteps. Some people have music, which is fine too. And some people just like to stick with that simple round, 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 round. And that's it. And that's totally fine. And, you know, the patterns that come out of it really are created by the participants' interpretation of what I tell them, the intro that I give them, and what they make of it, and how many people there are, how long they walk, how much they walk, and of course then also the snow conditions. If the snow is really deep, then it's harder to walk. If the snow is very flat, it's easier and you can get more done within a shorter time. So all of these things play a part in the final product, in the final drawing.
Amazing. I love that there's opportunity for participants who are not necessarily artists to kind of come out and still get to create.
Yeah.
I think that's really cool that you offer this opportunity for anybody to come out.
Yeah, I think that's part of what I'm trying to do. I want to, you know, bring art also to communities that might not necessarily be into art or might just not think about art a lot or not see a lot of art or not be exposed to it. And this, for me, is sort of a way in too, because it's a combination between an outdoor activity, a snow activity, and an arts project. And I think that makes it very attractive to a lot of people because it's fun. It's in the snow. It's about being outdoors. It's about breathing good air, being in the landscape, walking. But then in the end, you have actually produced an art piece all together as a collaboration, as a collaborative group. And I think it's group building in a way. And it's also a way for people to gain this partial authorship or ownership even of this project. And I've often had people go like, oh, you know, when they see the final views of the images, which I take with drones or from a high elevation or an airplane, they're like, oh, this, I know for sure, this spiral is the one that I made. And I know this one too. And, you know, so people get really excited around that.
Do you ever have anyone who's overly ambitious and kind of like veers off course, or is it just totally open?
I have not had that. Like, what do you mean? Like, veers off course, like does something else or creates different patterns?
Yeah, just someone who has their own idea and they just kind of go AWOL.
It has happened only in situations when there were people coming later, and it happened in one project where it wasn't quite made clear that everybody needs to be there at the same time and that there is a beginning time and it's not just come whenever you want or drop in, drop out kind of. There have been instances where somebody would walk suddenly a square or in one case a heart kind of shape, which I really don't want that to happen. So that's why I always emphasize that it's important for people to be on time. We can wait 5, 10, 15 minutes, but then it's just important that people come on time and that we all start as a group. And it doesn't work that people come in at different times, because I also go in the field and participate. So
Yeah, it seems like there should be some structure at the beginning, at least. How many hours does this usually take? What's the longest snow drawing you've done?
Well, there are projects that were done over 2 days, even in one case, 2.5 days. We started Friday afternoon and then Saturday and Sunday. And it was, you know, some participants would come all 3 days, some would only come 2 days or 1 day. A lot of projects are just done within 1 day, but then they go, you know, from, let's say we meet at 10 o'clock, which is usually a pretty good time, until whatever, you know, it's open-ended. That's the thing. It's like, even if somebody only has 2 hours, they can actually still participate as long as they start with everybody at the same time. But then it's up to people how long they contribute. Of course, I hope that people will be staying a long time, and, you know, because then we get more patterns and it becomes more dense and it becomes more fun and it becomes a much better piece in the end. Yeah. So, I mean, in some cases, you know, sometimes it was just by the end of it, two or one person and myself walking until almost the sunset, you know, until the sunset, actually. Yeah.
What inspired you to incorporate local communities to participate in your snow drawings?
I actually started this project on my own a few years ago, and it was just me walking these patterns and I was photographing them from elevations. It was actually not too far from here near Aspen where I started doing this. And then I did it again in an area near Steamboat Springs on Nature Conservancy lands. And that's when I noticed, well, you know, this would be so cool because, first of all, because of the experience that is so amazing being out there for so long and having this landscape and walking, and it's different from skiing where you just race through the landscape. It's just more intense in one place and more meditative in that sense. So I was like, I would like to share this, you know, with other people. And also I realized, well, if we were a whole big group doing this together, then we could create a much larger piece. So that's when I decided to try and do it on a larger scale with community involvement.
Yeah, and it's so great. Like you said, it almost gives these participants a sense of ownership, like they've collaborated and contributed to this masterpiece in the end.
Yeah.
You've been doing this for 10 years.
No, not quite, but close to. The first time I did it was actually when I did it on my own. I think that was during an artist residency at Anderson Ranch Art Center in 2009. I might not have done it until like 2 years later with a very small group at Rabbit Ears Pass, which is, well, it's a pass that goes between, I guess if you would be driving from Denver to Steamboat Springs, you'd go over that pass. And that was only with like, I would say 11, 12 people. And we created a pretty nice piece and it actually went viral on the internet. And yeah, that was, I think, 2 years later, if I'm not mistaken. And then from then on, I've done not every year, but almost every year. And some years it was like really a lot of projects, like 3-4 projects, often in different areas, sometimes even in different countries. And sometimes it would just be one project.
You know, when you first started, you were just by yourself. And then as this project has evolved, you've added people. Has there been any other changes?
Yeah, I mean, there have been projects that had a little bit more of a conceptual background where it wasn't just about laying patterns on top of this snow landscape, but there were two projects at a lake near Steamboat Springs that's a reservoir, and we were trying to draw the Yampa River on top of the frozen lake to recreate an idea of how the river was once meandering through that valley before the dam was there and the reservoir filled up that valley.
That's so cool. How does it make you feel after the snow has melted and your art pieces have essentially been destroyed?
I'm okay with that. I don't mind that. I actually like the ephemerality of that, of this particular project, and also with some of my other artwork, because I feel like, you know, this planet is so oversaturated with man-made products that we have made, whatever it is, you know, this desk or this microphone that I'm speaking into right now, or cars or whatever it is. Our planet is so oversaturated with things, with stuff. So I feel like as an artist, I totally prefer just having my work so it's ephemeral, and I end up having only the documentation of it. And I do print and show in galleries those snow drawings, photographs. So there are prints of them that I'm showing.
And you print them large?
Fairly large, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Describe your deep connection to nature and how you incorporate nature into all things urban.
I guess my connection to nature is kind of an old connection that I've always had, even in childhood. I would always escape into nature if there was something that was frightening or just something that I was upset about, or, you know, like some kids would close their door of their room and not let their parents in or something. I would just take my bike and a blanket and I'll just go into the fields and forests and be gone until it got dark. I grew up in a fairly rural place in Germany. The other question about urban environments and people and nature, I feel like, you know, we impact this planet in a substantial, huge way. But I also feel like we need to be connected to nature and we need to reconnect to it, because if we don't, I really think we are lost. we are going to build our own graves. We are not sustainable if we are not turning around our ways and if we are not looking at nature more and appreciating it more and understanding it better so that we can actually live in a way that's not impacting natural environments as negatively as we are doing now with, you know, drilling, fracking, mining, trashing like big time. I mean, we create so much trash, it's insane. There's this whole plastic island in the Pacific, you know, that's just made of plastic bags, and it's just crazy what we do to this planet. And you know, the planet's not gonna care. We are just extinguishing ourselves and most likely other species with us, but the planet is gonna recover. I mean, you know, what's time in planet history? Nothing. We are just like a blip. We are just a fraction of a second if you look at the history of the universe and our planet. So we need to do this for us, not for anyone else or for nature itself, because the planet really doesn't care. And I think it's really important that we reconnect. And I'm kind of hoping with this work that I can do that to some extent by bringing, not only by bringing the people, the participants into the landscape. Of course, they get kind of like a first-hand experience, which is awesome. And, you know, I hope that they will learn how to appreciate nature more through this, but also by showing the photographs and videos of it, you know, like spreading them online, showing them in galleries, showing the videos, and so on. I hope that I can reach out to other communities that are not directly involved in the project, but that can see how. Because the artwork basically layers itself on top of the natural environment and enhances it in a way. And I hope that with that, I can attract attention to the natural environment itself. So I'm hoping that, especially if I do pieces in like really stunning landscapes and really beautiful landscapes, I hope that people see this and not just the artwork, but the whole thing, and that they're like, wow, you know, these landscapes are really amazing. And look how huge all of this is and how vast. And do we really want to destroy this by putting all these fracking wells in there? You know, I'm hoping that I can speak to a larger public with that.
Have you noticed climate change affecting your process?
To some extent, yes. I have definitely noticed it, especially in the sense that I just can't rely anymore. I'm always like, well, the months I can do snow drawings is usually January through March. And then people tell me, yes, March, usually we have snow, but... You know, I usually work with some organizations locally, either an arts organization, an environmental organization, or even a culture organization. And it's always this discussion, when's the best time for me to come to, let's say, France? I did two projects in France, or to Vermont, or to upstate New York, or somewhere in Colorado. And the answers are, it's always this, like, because people are confused, you know, so they always tell me, well, usually... We always used to have the most amount of snow, let's say, in February, but now we don't know. Sometimes there's none in February and it comes in March. Sometimes we have snow into April. And sometimes, so it's been very difficult to work around that and plan. And most of the times I've been fairly lucky, but sometimes I have not. There was a project that I went to France for, and it was, we could do it a little bit. We did create a little piece, and it was not... You know, it was just not as compelling as the other pieces, just because the snow surface was actually really hard. So you could barely see the patterns. There was no new snowfall in like 2 weeks or something. And there was another one that I did in Aspen in a small valley where it was kind of a similar problem, where we just had like the snow was very old, and it was partly crusted, and it had all these textures in it, you know, from the wind and from melting and refreezing and melting again and that kind of thing. So yeah, climate change definitely is a bit of a headache for this project. I mean, it's a headache anyways, of course, but yes, I have felt it.
Snow is important,
yeah,
for all sorts of reasons.
Yeah.
What are some of the challenges that you've observed about nature and in cities?
I think the problem nowadays is that cities have become so big and sprawling, and there are so many kids that grow up in conditions where they barely ever get out into nature, where you know, I mean, even living in the Bay Area, I guarantee you there are many kids who have never been to the ocean, even though we have it right next to us, and even more kids who have never been up into the Sierras and seen snow, because the Bay Area, the San Francisco Bay Area, doesn't get any snow. I think it's an awareness thing, and it's also a thing of people being sort of very, very occupied these days, especially where I live in the Bay Area, where people have to have two jobs, three jobs to even be able to pay their rent and not have time to go into nature or to take their kids there, even though it's very close to us. I think that's a problem with society, and particularly so in cities, because like here in Paeonia, you won't have that problem so much because nature is just all around you. And then there's also the social economical divide, you know, which means that some people just don't have the means to get out into nature, and also not the means to get good education about it, or that their kids go to schools that have no money at all, and that some kids might do a field day or something and go to the ocean or go into the snow or something. But not all schools do that. So I think that is probably our greatest problem, and especially so in cities.
Where can we find you in the off season? I mean, I guess it snows in different parts all over the world, but what do you do in your free time?
It's not like I go to Australia or somewhere in the summer so I can get more winter. I love the summertime. So I haven't done that yet. So usually I do my snow drawings projects really only when it's winter in the Northern Hemisphere where I live. I mean, I guess if somebody invited me for a snow drawings project that's a paid project in Australia, I would probably go for that. I would love to do that. You know, snow drawings is not my only artwork, so I do a lot of projects that are video-based, but they are, most of them are also explorations of natural environments or the intersection between man and nature and how people have treated environments, like kind of like the history of people in environments, different kinds of environments. And then those end up being a lot of times video installations with multiple projections where the viewer kind of gets drawn into an environment, into an experience. And I do other projects sometimes out in the land that are ephemeral, sort of like snow drawings. They can be performative, like performance elements to them, or they can be something that I do in the landscape, but that totally regenerates and that goes away, that doesn't leave traces, lasting traces. So those are other projects.
Yeah, you need a break from the snow.
Yeah.
After a while. Has anyone ever had any negative reactions or responses?
No. However, there have been incidences, especially in one place in near Truckee in California, meaning in the Sierra Nevada, where snowmobiles went through the patterns. And it was actually on lands where they are absolutely not allowed to go. And I don't know if they just wanted to play a prank on us or if they were not noticing what they were going through, because they go pretty quickly and fast, and they might have just gone through that field and before they even knew they were in the midst of it. And, you know, they weren't doing like donuts or anything in there. They were just going straight through, but it was kind of disturbing. But in a way, I decided it was just part of this project. It just became part of it, and it was just kind of evidence of how snow surfaces or landscapes are also used, which is kind of disruptive to everybody. And so it was a little annoying.
Yeah. Share with us where we can find your art.
Well, most of it you could probably just find on my website. It's basically my name, and I'm sure you have a way to link that too. So
yeah. I'll link that. I'll make sure that we point our listeners in the right direction to check out your work. And I just want to say thank you for coming down to KVNF. I was really excited to meet you and to talk with you about your beautiful snow drawings.
Yeah, thank you so much.
That was artist Sonja Henrichsen talking with us about her art and her community-driven series called Snow Drawings. You're listening to Local Motion on KVNF. Now we'll hear from Natalie Haynes and her daughter Amelie, two local participants in the recent snow drawings that took place on the Grand Mesa.
My first name is Amelie, and I'm 5 years old.
And so you got to participate in the snow drawings the other day. What did you think when you first got up to the Grand Mesa?
I was really excited to do it.
It was your first time on snowshoes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so what was that like walking in the snow with your snowshoes?
Heavy.
What was your favorite part?
Doing the shape.
What kind of shapes were you drawing?
Spirals.
Can you explain, like, how you made the spiral?
I just walked in a circle over and over and over and over again.
Who are you following?
Dad.
So your dad walked in front of you and then you kind of followed him?
Mm-hmm.
Was it good to have a leader to follow?
Uh-huh. I tried doing one by myself, but I kind of made an 8 instead.
An 8?
Mm-hmm.
Were you tired afterward? Was it a lot of work?
Uh-huh. I had to take some breaks in the spiral.
Do you do any other art other than snow drawing?
Mm-hmm.
What kind of art do you do?
Like painting and drawing.
Do you think you'd do snow drawings again?
Yes.
So, Natalie, what drew you to the snow drawings?
You know, my sister-in-law sent me a clip that she found online of some movies of artists doing this and seeing all the creations they could make in the snow, like just this winter. And I thought that looks so cool. I'm like, wow, it must be such hard work. And how do you go about that? And then I saw this image about the event coming up that Carolina posted and everything. And like, oh my gosh, we have to do this. This looks like so much fun. And Amelie had never been on snowshoes before. And I thought, what a cool way to introduce this whole like concept to her and this activity and make it an art project. And she loved it. Her and I do a lot of art together, and she actually draws spirals in some of her artwork. Yeah. It was interesting because I, as an artist, I was trying not to get so fixated on like, oh, I'm drawing in the snow and what does this look like? I was trying to imagine so hard, like from above, like what would I be seeing and how much space to leave between my tracks and what would this look like in a distance and everything. So I was like, no, just let go and just do it and have fun. And at some point I took my camera and was taking a video of the spiral edge, the last line I made while I was making the next line around. And as I was curving around and just watching it, it just became this interesting like movement because I was just focusing on that line and walking around like, I can see how this is meditative now. And it was tough. We sunk in a little bit. Thank goodness we had snowshoes on. We would have just post-holed all the way through with our boots. We started first, and then other people moved up on the cross-country track. They went hiked up further a little bit and then entered at a different spot. We all kind of respected each other's space and time to themselves and also like planning what they wanted to do.
Will you know which piece was yours when you see the picture?
Yeah, for sure. I think since you feel it, you are like the pencil drawing it in the snow. So you have this physical connection to what you made, like your whole body experience to it. It's just different than just moving your hand and making spirals. So it was really cool.
Sonia said that it gives the participants a sense of ownership of this piece. And I think that's just mm-hmm. so cool because obviously some art you do solo, but the opportunity to collaborate is exciting to me.
Right. And definitely you can work off of, we worked off of each other's space. So without them being there, it might have seemed really overwhelming to you have this huge area of land to make spirals and how big do I have to make this one, you know, and you kind of worked off of each other and kind of balanced it all. And it was a really cool experience for sure.
Cool. I can't wait for our listeners to see what the final spirals and the final snow drawings look like.
Well, thanks for having us.
Yeah. Thank you for coming down to KVNF. Thanks, Amelie. To check out these beautiful snow drawings, please visit kvnf.org. And you can also visit sonia-henrichsen.com. Special thanks to local photographer Ben Lehman, who participated and also provided the aerial images. You've been listening to Local Motion on KVNF. I'm Corey Stanton. Thank you for tuning in.